Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Pesachim is daf Nun Vav. We're in Nun Hei Amud Beis. We are starting today at the Mishnah, in the middle of the Amud. Let's get underway. The Mishnah is a continuation of a discussion of what we can do in Erev Pesach. Erev Pesach is a quasi-yontif. It's like Chol HaMoed. In fact, you're going to hear that a lot this morning. How basically Erev Pesach is similar to Chol HaMoed. In fact, if we can, if I'm allowed to say this, it's like Chol HaMoed light. It's like a lighter version of Chol HaMoed, that Erev Pesach. So has some sort of yontif quality to it, and therefore there's an issur malacha. How much issur malacha is there? So as we already discussed since the beginning of the perek, so at least half a day of issur malacha. Not a yontif type of issur malacha, but in other words, an abstention of work. Really, you should not be doing work on Erev Pesach. So again, afternoon, that's a din, that's a halacha. In the morning, so that was a minhag. Some communities have the minhag that they work in the morning of Erev Pesach, and some communities have the minhag of not to work. Which professions? We spoke already out the division between the north and the south. The north, the Galo, so they did work on Erev. I'm sorry, they didn't work. Apologize. They didn't work on Erev Pesach in the morning, and at least according to Beit Shammai, not even the night prior. And Yehuda, so in the southern portion of Eretz Yisrael, so they did work. They worked on the morning of Erev Pesach. What professions can stay open on Erev Pesach? Who can open up their stores? So that we learned in the previous Mishnah. The previous Mishnah spoke out that tailors and barbers and laundromats, so obviously people need them for Yontif, so they can open the doors on Erev Pesach. And according to Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, even shoemakers can open the doors on Erev Pesach. So, okay, that's what we discussed yesterday. That was the end of yesterday's discussion. What else can we do on Erev Pesach in terms of work? That's what we're going to be continuing discussing. And now we are in the Mishnah on and Hamad Beis, and we continue. Moshivin Shochvin, sorry, Shovchin, Latarnagolin, Biyadalin. So let's say you have your chicken sitting on your eggs, and their job is to send the eggs. The eggs need to be warmed so that the eggs can become fertilized and develop, the chicks inside can develop. So therefore, I need the mothers to sit down on the eggs. So what I could do is that I could take a chicken and just dump it right on the egg, so that the egg will get warmed up. V'tarnegol shabar chan. Let's say you have a renegade chicken, right? The hen is running away, so machzir noso. So you could take the hen and you can put it back on top of the egg. The Gemara is going to ask the obvious question, which is that if the Mishnah starts off with Moshivin, which means that for the very first time I'm allowed to sit the chicken on the egg, so then Machzirin seems to be a no-brainer. It seems to be much less of a Chiddush, and why would the Mishnah need to then tell us about the idea of Machzirin if we already know the idea of Moshivin? Gemara is going to ask that question. We're going to get to that later on. Machzirin Asolim Kama. V'im Eisa Moshivin Acheres Tachta. Now let's say, God forbid, the hen dies. And so, so you get a replacement hen, and you could put the replacement hen on top of the egg so that the egg continues to develop. Gorfa mitachas ragla behemam yedalin. You can sweep away the dung of the animal on the 14th day of Nisan, meaning even though it's, in other words, it's not glamorous work, but it's still work. But you're allowed to do that on the 14th day of Nisan. Give your animal some clean area. Uva moed mesakin l'tzadim. Now on moed, which as we'll learn later on, that's probably chol moed. So there, you could only sweep it to the side. Meaning you can't totally sweep it out of the area, but you can just simply push it to the side. What about bringing kelim to a craftsman? Right, you have a kli that you want worked on. Jewelry you want to be made, whatever the craftsman is doing. So the Mishnah says that you could bring it to the craftsman and you could take it back home on the 14th day of Nisan, even though you don't need it for Chol HaMoed. That would be okay. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. We start with the Gemara. The Gemara asked a question which I already foreshadowed. Hashta osuvi masvinan ahadura mibaye. So the chicken discussion, meaning the Mishnah started off by saying I could take for the very first time a chicken and plop it on top of an egg so that the egg will get warmed by the chicken. So the next point of the Mishnah of Machzirin, so that seems to be a no-brainer, meaning the chicken's already been sitting on the egg, and now the chicken decided he wants a career change in life, and the chicken now runs away, so he could grab the chicken and put it back on the egg. But again, that's a no-brainer. So Amar Abaye, Seif Asal L'Chol Hashem Oed. So Abaye's answer is, and again, this is an answer you're going to just see again and again. No. The second half of the Mishnah, not the second half, but the second statement of the Mishnah, that's talking about Chol HaMoed. meaning on the 14th day of Nisan. So there you're given a little more room to maneuver and a little more room to work. On the 14th day of Nisan, even for the very first time, you can have a hen and plop it on top of the egg. On Chol HaMoed, the only thing you could do is return the hen to the egg, but you can't put it on for the very first time. Remember Chol HaMoed, we'll talk about this when we get to Moed Katan. It's one of the first discussions of the Masechet Moed Katan. On Chol HaMoed, you can save loss. You don't have to suffer loss. But to make a profit or to make a gain, that you're not allowed to do. So if the egg has already been produced and the hen is already sitting on it, and then the hen runs away, so then I can bring it back. That's a Davar HaAved. But to initiate, that you're not allowed to do during Chol HaMoed. So that's the distinction. Our Mishnah's first statement is talking about the 14th, which, as I described earlier, was like Chol HaMoed light. And then the second half of the Mishnah, that's talking about Mamash on Chol HaMoed itself. I'm Rav Huna, we're back in the Gemara. Lo shanu ala toch shlosha lemarda, de'akati lo parach simra, mina, ve'achar shlosha liyishivasa, de'pasta la be'i legamre. Now, a couple of conditions need to be met in order for me to be able to return a chicken to the egg. Number one, condition number one is that it has to have been that this egg was sat on already for 3 days. So in other words, there's heat. There's already some internal heat generated in the egg. And so, I'm going out of order. It has to be within 3 days. Thank you. Let me do it in the correct order. It has to be within 3 days of when the chicken ran away. In other words, because it still has some heat that was generated by the mother sitting on it. And also has to be sat on for 3 days. Okay? So it has to be that the total amount of time that the chicken sat on the egg was for 3 days, and it has to be that even though the hen ran away, it's within 3 days of it running away. Once you have both of those conditions, then I can take the hen and return it back on the egg. I'm going to read that again. Okay, it has to be within 3 days so that the heat doesn't escape. And it has to be after 3 days when the chicken sat on the egg, because otherwise we're just going to lose the egg in its entirety. But after 3 days, the parach lay simmer, where there's no longer any internal heat. So in other words, it's not going to help to put the hen back on the egg. Or let's say the hen hasn't sat on the chicken for a total of 3 days, where basically the egg is not at a loss. I could still sell the egg. Lo mehadrinan. So therefore, we're not allowed to put the hen back on the egg because it's really not going to help. It's, in other words, it won't help generate the developing egg, the developing chicken side. Rabbi Amar filotoch shoshali shivasa mehadrinan b'makamifli. And Rabbi Ami says that even if the mother has not stand on the egg for 3 days, you could still return the hen to the top. The Maikamiflagi, Marsavala Hafsimuruba Khashu, Lahafsimur Lochashu, Marsavala Hafsimur Namikhashu. Now the issue over here is how much Hefsaid are we allowed to do work in order to save? Meaning, are we talking about a significant loss or not such a significant loss? So according to the first opinion, it has to be a significant loss. Meaning that the egg was already sat on for 3 days, and now I need the hen to sit on it, otherwise I'm going to lose the egg in totality. Whereas the second opinion says, no, even if I'm not going to lose the egg in totality, even though the hen hasn't sat on the egg for 3 days, and the truth of the matter is, as Rashi explains, I could sell the egg at a discount, but that's still going to be a loss. So I'm still allowed to put the hen on top of the egg. Okay. Gorfi mitachas, now we're talking about shoveling the excrement of the animal on the 14th day of Nisan. Tan Rabbanan hazeva shebechatz masakan osol etzdadim. If I have dung in the courtyard, so I can sweep it to the side. Shebe refes, if it's in the pen, shebechatz der motzin osol ashba, there I can take it out totally. Now, are we confused? Yeah, we should be confused. Meaning, the first part of the brisa talks about only sweeping it to the side, and the second part of the brisa says it totally removing it from your courtyard. Hagufakashi, and the Gemara notes this difficulty. Amar zevel shebechatz mesakan usolitz dardim. The first part of the brisa says moving it to the side, you're allowed to move it to the side. V'hadu tanisha berefesh shebechatz mosin usolah ashpa. And the second half of the brisa talks about removing it entirely. Amar abai lo kashi kan be yudalid. Here we go again. The difference between the 14th day of Nisan and Chol HaMoed. Meaning, on the 14th day of Nisan, again, it's Chol HaMoed, but Chol HaMoed light. It's a lighter version of Chol HaMoed. So there, you can take the dung and totally remove it from the courtyard. As opposed to on Chol HaMoed itself, where we're not allowed to do malacha on Chol HaMoed. I mean, to a certain degree, we're not allowed to do malacha. To a certain degree, we are allowed to. But still, it's Chol HaMoed. So the only thing you're allowed to do is move it to the side. Rava Amar Hava Haba Chol HaMoed. The Gemara tries to give another answer, which is that both parts of these brisa are talking about on Chol HaMoed itself, the Hachi Kamar, and how we're going to understand the brisa. Im Naaseh Chatzar Berefes, Motzino Sola Ashba. If your Chatzar becomes a pen, right? How many times mom comes into the room? This room looks like a pig pen. Okay, so if your Chatzar looks like a pen, so then you're allowed to not only just push it to the side, but actually take the excrement and move it and remove it from the chatzer. That's how. But if it's just a little bit of excrement, so and it doesn't look like a pen, so then you just simply sweep it to the side. Okay, malich and kelim avin mi beis ha'uman. Now our mishnah, last part of our mishnah was taking items to a craftsman on the 14th day of Nisan. What did our mishnah say? Yeah, you could do it. And not only can you take it to the craftsman, but you're allowed to bring it back from the craftsman's house on the 14th day of Nisan. And even if, said the Mishnah, you don't need it for Yontif, you're still allowed to bring it back. Amar Papa Badaglan Rava. We got a test from Rava. Rava gave us a Bechina. Tanan, we learned in the Mishnah, Malichan Mavin Kelami Beis Ha'uman Afa Pishen Otzorach HaMoed. Uriminu. So first he quotes the Mishnah. Fine. Then he's going to quote a Braisa. Ein Mavin Kelami Beis Ha'uman. The im choshesh lahem shema yignevu mipnei mifana lechatzer acheres. The brisa says that you cannot bring home things from the Beis HaUman. However, if you're suspicious of the blacksmith or whatever artisan he is, and you're afraid that the item that you deposited by him is not safe and secure, so what you can do is you can go over there, take it out of his possession, and move it to somewhere else. Move it into another courtyard. Okay? But that's only if you distrust him. So now, a little bit of a problem. Our Mishnah says, without any reservation, without any limitation, that you can go to the Uman's house and bring home whatever you deposited by him. And then the Braisa says, no, only if you mistrust him can you take it, and you can't even bring it home, you move it to another chatzer. So Rav is asking his Talmidim, what do you do about that? And here we go for the third time now this morning, same distinction. Depending whether we're talking about the 14th day of Nisan or actually Chol HaMoed. 14th day of Nisan, again, it's Chol HaMoed light. So therefore, you can actually go and take home the item without any reservation. If it's on Chol HaMoed itself, and I don't need this item neither for Chol HaMoed nor for Yontif. So then what I'm allowed to do is I'm allowed to not take it home, but take it out of the hands of the Uman and move it somewhere where it's safe. Another possible suggestion of these Talmidim is that maybe both the Mishnah and the Brisa is talking about on Chol HaMoed itself. Lokasha kam bin ma'amino kam b'she'ino ma'amino. And it depends whether I trust or do not trust him. And in other words, if I trust him, so therefore, well, it's a little bit strange. If I trust him, so then I can keep it there. And if I don't trust him, then I can take it out of his possession and move it somewhere else. The Hatanya, the Gemara says, but this distinction is actually bears out in a Braisa. The Braisa says, Mevin kelim beis ha'uman, kigon ha'kad mi beis ha'kadad, a jug from the jug maker, ha'kos mi beis ha'zagag, the cup from the glass maker, avalot semer mi beis ha'tzava, avalot kelim mi beis ha'uman, but I can't bring back wool from the dyer, nor kelim from the craftsman, v'im ein lo ma yochal. Now, Let's say that the craftsman here in question really has nothing to eat, meaning he has no money. So therefore, no sein lo schcharo. You can pay him even on Chol HaMoed. Uminichin etzlo, and you can leave it by him. V'imeinu ma'amino. Now, what if you distrust him and you don't want your item just waiting, sitting by him? Manichin bebayis hasamuch lo. So what you're allowed to do is you're allowed to put it into a house that is near him. V'im choshe shema yignevu. Now, if you're worried that maybe it's going to get stolen, v'im bitzina besoch beso. So then what you're allowed to do is you're allowed to actually bring it back home. Okay. So what does this brisa tell us? That if there's mistrust, if there isn't mistrust, you leave it by him. But if there is mistrust, so then you're allowed to take it out of his possession. And if you're really not confident that the item is going to be safe and secure wherever you moved it, you could quietly bring it back home. That's what the brisa says. So this brisa does speak to this idea that if there is mistrust, so then you can actually take the item back home, even on Chol HaMoed. The Gemara says, that's wonderful. Taratz to Mevi'im Olichin Kasha. However, you look back at our Mishnah, all this doesn't really respond, it doesn't address our Mishnah. Because our Mishnah says, not only are you allowed to bring the item back home, you're allowed to even bring the item to him, to the craftsman on, quote-unquote, on Yontav, on Chol HaMoed. So, Taratz to Mevi'im Olichin Kasha, Diktani Ein Mevi'im V'Kol Shekein Dein Molichin. Meaning, if you're not allowed to bring it back, you're certainly not to bring it, allowed to bring it to him. So the Gemara basically forfeits this approach and basically goes back to our first approach. Our first approach, which was the approach that the Gemara basically resorted to again and again, is the distinction between the 14th day of Nisan and actual Chol HaMoed. 14th day of Nisan, so again, it's like a lighter version of Chol HaMoed. So therefore, I'm allowed to bring an item to the craftsman, I'm allowed to take it from him and bring it back home. That's on Yudalin. On Chol HaMoed itself, no. In other words, on Chol HaMoed itself, I can't bring it to the craftsman, and to actually bring it back home, that also I shouldn't do, unless there's mistrust. If there's mistrust, I feel like the item is not safe and secure in the hands of the craftsman, so then I'm allowed to take it out of his possession. Best thing is to put it somewhere else. Next best thing is, if I'm really not confident, I'll then be able to take it back home. Okay. Adkan, that now takes us through those activities. There's just a small discussion about activities that you're not allowed to do, you are not allowed to do on the 14th day of Nisan. Okay, and now we're going to finish up. We're finishing up now the fourth parak of Pesachim. This is now what we're about to do, is the last Mishnah of the fourth parak. You'll see we have two dapim to go. We have today's daf, we have tomorrow's daf. Tomorrow's daf, we got a little bit of a breather, which makes me feel confident in terms of finishing up the fourth parak tomorrow. And this is a very interesting Mishnah. This Mishnah is going to mention questionable practices of Anshei Yericho, and then it'll move on to a discussion on the top of Nun Vav to questionable practices of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. But first things first, let's go through our Mishnah. Now, we're going to really go off topic today. But the reason why we're going to go off topic today is because we're going to mention a number of different practices that were done by the members of the city of Yericho. Okay, Shisha Dvarim Asu Anche Yericho. There were six things that were done by the members of the town of Yericho. I remember in my youth, I went to Yericho. Nowadays, right, you don't go. I don't know. I think still people go to Yericho nowadays, but I remember as a kid, I'm going back, you know, decades, but as a kid I went to Yericho, but Yericho, we know that was the first town that was conquered by Yehoshua. We also know that one of the things that Yehoshua said after conquering Yericho, right, walls come down, is I want nobody to build it up again, meaning as a sign of conquest, I want Yericho to be decimated and never to be built up again. We'll come back to that point of Yehoshua's edict. We'll come back to that point later. But anyway, though, Shisha Dvar Masu Anshe Yericho. There were six things that were done by Yericho. Ashlosha Michu B'Yadam, Ashlosha Lo Michu B'Yadam. Meaning the general feelings of the Chachamim were, we don't like any of these practices. None of the six. But three of them were so egregious, we'll protest. Three of them, not so egregious, but we still don't like it. But we won't protest. The Elon Shlomichu B'Yadam. So first, the things they did which were questionable, but not worthy of protest. Number one, Markivin Dekalim Kol Hayom. What they would do is they would graft plants all day long. Graft plants all day long. First of all, isn't there an issur of grafting? So, yes, let's start there. Yes, there's an issur of grafting. But they weren't grafting different types of plants together. But in other words, they were just grafting. It was part of, they were planting. Basically, they were planting on the 14th day of Nisan. But now we know why this mission is here, because our parak is primarily dedicated to the topic of the 14th day of Nisan. So they would actually be planting on the 14th day of Nisan. And what's so wrong about that? You're not allowed to work on Erev Pesach.
Hey, what about the idea of wearing in Yerushalayim offering Korban Pesach?
Huh?
Wearing in Yerushalayim offering Korban Pesach?
Yeah, in somebody's notes, and now I forget whom, but in somebody's notes, I saw somebody raise that as an issue.
Right. That's a bigger issue, no?
Yeah, I mean, yes. Yes, but okay. I don't have an answer, and it's a good question. Okay, Markivan de Kalim Kolayom. So number one, so they would be basically planting, grafting all day long on the 14th day of Nisan. Okay, shouldn't be working on Erev Pesach. Two, Korchin es Hashma. So I'm not going to explain it now. We'll get to it later on this morning. They're bundling the Shema. What does that mean? We'll see later on. Kotzrin v'gotchin lifnei haOmer. Also, they would harvest before the Omer. Omer is second day of Pesach. Omer is the day where all grains now that took root up until that point in time now become permissible. Okay? And they would harvest before the Omer. Now, generally speaking, what's the feelings of harvesting before the Omer? Feelings are, don't do it. Well, there's nothing wrong per se with harvesting. In fact, the Gemara later on will say that harvesting itself is totally fine. But harvesting, once I harvest it, now I've taken that which is forbidden, it's chadash, before the second day of Pesach. It's now new grains, which the Torah does not permit, and it's now no longer connected to the ground, and then I heap it in a pile, and then I start processing it, and obviously there's a chance I may come to eat it. So harvesting, collecting it in a pile, you shouldn't do it before the second day of Pesach, and they were doing it. And again, questionable behavior, but didn't warrant a protest. Elu shemichu biyadam. But now the Mishnah goes over three things where the Chachamim protested. Not appropriate. Matirin gemizio shel hekdesh. Now, the forefathers, Rashi describes over here, these are sycamore trees. Sycamore trees where, in the previous generations, what their ancestors did is they dedicated the trees to hekdesh. Okay? The trees belong to hekdesh. What they did now, this new generation of members of Yericho, is that there was a new branch that grew. Their argument is, well, the trunk of the tree belongs to Hekdesh, but the new growth of the tree, that doesn't belong to Hekdesh. That's ours. That's their argument. Say, we'll see later on in the Gemara, somewhat of a weak argument. In fact, it's so weak, the Chachamim protested. We'll see if there's any validity to that argument, but that's what they did. Number two, second thing they did that warranted protest. They would go under the trees. The fruit that fell off the tree they would eat, and this was occurring on Shabbos. There, we have prohibitions of what's called nolad. We'll talk about that tomorrow's daf. Okay, so they were eating the fruit under the tree. And finally, nos nimpei al yerek, and in their vegetable fields, they would portion off a corner to give to the poor people, otherwise known as the mitzvah peah. That's a bad thing? So interestingly enough, yeah, that's a bad thing. That you're not allowed to do. So why is it a bad thing? So Rashi explains over here, and again, we'll see this in tomorrow's daf. The reason why is because vegetables are not obligated in the mitzvah of peah. Peah has certain requirements that it needs to. The fruit needs to have certain requirements. Vegetables does not meet those requirements, and so therefore, there's no mitzvah of peah by yerek. And what's the big deal if they do portion off a corner of the field for the poor people? Doesn't sound like a bad thing. It is. Because we know the halacha is that once I dedicate something to the poor people through peah, those vegetables are going to be exempt from trumos and maestros. So essentially what they're doing is they're taking vegetables and they are removing the obligation of trumos and maestros from those vegetables. That's a no-no. Huh? Min haTorah, there's no obligation to take off trumas and maisos from vegetables, but mid rabbanan there is. So they are.
The thing is that since it's still on the ground field, it's really not
Yeah, I understand that, but the understanding is that once it comes off, you're right, but once it comes off, though, so then, had it not been paya, it would have been obligated in Shurma Samaisos.
More like a grama than anything else, right?
Yeah. Okay, now, if you open up your Mishnayos, which I know you don't have in front of you right now, so you could check me up later on in this. So if you open up your Mishnayos, the Mishnah doesn't end here. The Mishnah actually goes on, meaning even though in our Gemara that we're looking at right now, it looks like the Mishnah has ended, but this next Braisa, which we're about to read in the Gemara, actually has been incorporated in the Mishnayos. So, for us, it's the beginning of the Gemara, but if you look in your Mishnayos, you'll see this is actually still part of the Mishnah. Tana Rabbanan, Shisha Dvarim Asa Chizkiah HaMelech. Chizkiah HaMelech did also six things, right? The number today is six. Six is today's number, and today's daf is Nun Vav, 56. Okay, it's a good way to remember. So the... Chizkiah also did six things, and again, Asher Shehodulo v'Asher Shelo Hodulo. Now here, it's not like Yericho. Everything they did was not everything. All six things were not viewed as good things. It's just a question of degrees, like how not good, worthy of protest or not. Here by Chizkiah HaMelech, so of the six things that he did, three of them, the Chachamim said, yeah, that was a good thing. And for three, the Chachamim said, no, that's not right. Now, first of all, Chizkiah HaMelech, who is he? Okay, one of the later kings in the First Temple period. He was a good guy. Chizkiah HaMelech brought Torah back to its place. Destroyed all the Avodah Zarah of his father. His father, who was also a king, his father was Achaz, one of the wicked kings of Yehuda. Brought Avodah Zarah introduced Avodah Zarah to the Jewish people. So Chizkiah, his son, removed the Avodah Zarah, and then Chizkiah's son ends up also being a bad king of the Jewish people. Okay, for a later discussion. But anyway, Tanu Rabban Shisha Dvar Masu Chizkiah Malach Hashosha Hodulo V'Hashosha Lo Hodulo. Gira Atzamos Aviv Al Mita Shel Chavalim. He dragged the bones of his father, meaning after his father's death, when there was time for a burial of his father, so what he did is that he basically tied his bones up, the bones of his father, and he dragged them on a bed of rope. Now, why did he do that? So Rashi says there are two motivations. Take a look at Rashi. It's the third line down from the top. Gira Artsamos Aviv Mishum Kapara. So Rashi says point number one is that he wanted to provide a kapara for his father. His father was an Ovid of Arazara, so obviously had a lot to atone for. So part of the dragging of the bones would provide kapara for the father. V'lo kivru b'kavod b'dargash umita na'eh. And wouldn't bury him in a proper coffin. And then Rashi goes on also to write, umibnei kiddush Hashem sheyitgane al risho v'yivasru harishaim. And another point to consider, says Rashi, is that by doing this to the bones of his father, so it's also going to be demonstrative to everyone else. Meaning, the dad was an Ovid of Avodah Zarah. Okay, look what happens. Yeah, so the big discussion, yeah, Ben, once again, you hit it on the head. The big discussion that takes place outside of the Gemara, not inside the Gemara, is it's his father. And this is the way that he's behaving to his father. So that may explain why Rashi goes over two points. Meaning Rashi's first point is that he's providing a kapara for his father. So, right, dad wants it, dad doesn't want it. That's an important part of the discussion. But at least, kind of understand what does kapara have to do with anything over here? Maybe that's what's motivating Rashi. Rashi's saying kapara because it's covered for his father because it's providing atonement for his father. Maybe that's why Rashi is so set on explaining that this is part of the kapara process. But yes, it's strange that this is the way he's going to treat his father. And there's a large discussion. I'm not going to have it now, but it's good. It's a good discussion. It's a large discussion of whether one can honor his father if his father's a Rasha, right? Is there a mitzvah of kibud av v'aim if your father is a bona fide Rasha, right? I don't mean just bad guy. I mean navarian, like a real sinner. So that's obviously another discussion. Big machlokas amongst the Rishonim.
Every kaddish didn't say a word.
Huh?
Every
kaddish
didn't
no,
say
no.
Word.
Apparently not. Which is you know, today and nowadays they, you know, they would have been running the whole show. Anyway, the fine. So number one. So Gira Samas Aviv Al Mita Shachavalam Vahodulam. And interestingly enough, the Chachamim said, yeah, good move. Right, that's good. Two, Kitate Nachash Nechoshes, he took the bronze snake and he ground it up. He pulverized the bronze snake. What bronze snake are we talking about? Right, that's correct. The one that was in the Midbar, Parshas Chukas, where the Jews were getting bitten by snakes. And what Moshe did is that, by instruction by Kadosh Baruch Hu, he made a Nachash Nechoshes, he made the bronze snake, he had people look at it, and they were healed. The Mishnah Rosh Hashanah we're all familiar with. You think the bronze snake was the one that was doing the healing, right? The Mishnah Rosh Hashanah says, Ella, Shayu Mistakim, Kalpe Mala, they forced them to look up to their father up in heaven. Okay, anyway, Vahodu Lo. Now, the reason why he pulverized it is because during his day and age, people looked at the bronze snake and said, hey, that must have some sort of deity power to it. And people started worshiping the bronze snake, so he pulverized, he ground it up. Gana Sefer Refuos, and the last thing that he did, which the Chachamim commended him for, is he took the Book of Remedies and he hid the Book of Remedies. We no longer have the Book of Remedies. Vahodulo, and the Chachamim said that was a great move. Good move. Okay, the obvious question, and perhaps one of the more interesting topics for today is going to be, what is the Book of Remedies? Who? What? Where did that come up? And do we have it anymore? So the answer to my last question is no, we don't have it anymore. That's exactly what Chizkiah wanted. He wanted us not to have it anymore, and so therefore it's tucked away, it's hidden, and no longer do we have the Book of Remedies. What is this Book of Remedies? So let's take a look at Rashi. And Rashi writes over here, Gana Sefer Refuos, Kedichsiv, V'hatov Be'inecha Asisi, V'amrin Be'bracha Shegana Sefer Refuos, Lefi Shelohaya Libam Nechna, Al-Cholim, Ela Misrapim Miyad. So the way Rashi describes it, it was legitimate. It was a book of remedies. Yeah. So I'll get to that point in just a moment. That's I'm moving in that direction. So Rashi says it's a real book of remedies, meaning that they had some sort of practice of medicine, and as Ben pointed out, and we'll see, I'm going to show you in the Rambam in just a moment, authorship of the Book of Remedies was assigned to Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech was the smartest of all men, so he wrote the Book of Remedies. And the problem with the book, what's the problem with it? In other words, basically what we're talking about is practicing medicine. So the problem with that is, says Rashi, is that when people got sick, so what they would do is they would go to the doctor instead of going to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he would pray to the doctor instead of praying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And, you know, the old age God complex of the doctors. So the problem isn't the doctors. The problem is the people who thought, oh, the doctor is going to provide me a healing and not God. And so therefore, in order to have people turn more of their attention to HaKadosh Baruch Hu rather than the doctors, so Chizkiah hid the Book of Remedies. That's the way Rashi sets up this discussion. So the Rambam, I don't often quote other Mefarshim, but the Rambam over here, you know, the Rambam wrote Perusha Mishnayos, right? That's, if I'm not mistaken, it's one of the first works that the Rambam put together in his long authorship career, right? The Yad Chazaka, the Rambam's Mishnah Torah, is really took the bulk of his life. That is basically all the halacha organized, codified. Right, that's the Rambam's Mishnah Torah. But one of the first things that he wrote was the Perusha Mishnayos. He wrote a commentary to the Mishnah. He wrote it originally in Arabic, and then it gets translated. It gets translated into Hebrew, if I'm not mistaken. I think it got translated twice into Hebrew. But either way, you'll see a very basic translation of the Mishnayos, and it's he doesn't normally go off topic. Here, on his Perusha Mishnayos, he goes totally off topic. Meaning, he goes over, he doesn't go over most of that which is mentioned, but he spends a lot of time discussing Sefer Refuos. And basically, I'm going to paraphrase, meaning I could read the Rambam right now, but then I will not have time to do anything else. But to paraphrase the Rambam, and I encourage you to take a look at it inside, in his Perusha Mishnayos, he basically says like this. First of all, what was Sefer Refuos? So he actually writes, I mean, you can see it inside, it's basically a talisman. sorcery. I know he didn't believe in it to begin with. I'm aware of that. But in other words, black magic, astrology, just, you know, voodoo, basically. If you want to give it a Miami flavor, like Santeria, like, in other words, weird stuff like that. The Rambam says that's Sefer Refus. But it's not, in other words, from his perspective, it's not normative medicine. That's not what it was talking about. In fact, the Rambam says, I heard somebody say that the Pshat in the Mishnah is that what he hid was a book of medicine, of normative medicine. And the Rambam says, and you can imagine the Rambam saying this, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. I cannot imagine somebody offering that as a Pshat in the Mishnah. Now, he's referring to Rashi, by the way. Now, did he know that Rashi wrote this? I don't know. The Rambam never quotes Rashi. So I don't know if he knows that Rashi wrote this. But it's the Rambam actually writes, it's a popular Pshat in the Mishnah. And that's why I'm taking time to write how ridiculous I think that is. That it's what Chizkiyahu hid was a normative book of medicine. Why in the world would anyone hide a normative book of medicine? If it's actual medical practice and it really works, so who in the right mind would want to hide that? And the Rambam says, let me ask you a question. He says, going back to Rashi, why did Rashi say people hid it? Because people then turn to the doctors and not to Kadosh Baruch Hu for their healing. So the Rambam says, I can't think of anything more absurd. The Rambam says, let me ask you a simple question. Again, I'm just paraphrasing. You can see all this inside in the Rambam, in his Perashat Mishnayos. Let me ask you a simple question. Let's say a person's hungry. Okay? And so now he's really, it's bothering him how hungry he is. Okay, so what should he do now? So he should sit there with a sitter and pray to God, God, please take care of my hunger. In other words, that's not what he's going to do. What he's going to do is he's going to sit down to a meal and he's going to eat. So in other words, there's a certain nature that's built into us. We operate under natural law. And part of natural law is, I go eat when I'm hungry. So when you're sick, what are you supposed to do? So the Rambam says, when you're sick, you're supposed to go to the doctor. That's part of the natural order of things. That's how the world works. So if I have Sefer Refus and it's a legitimate book of medicine, so who in the right mind would hide it? It's like hiding food, says the Rambam. Okay? Interesting way the Rambam looks at medicine, food, basically the same thing. You know, in other words, okay. So the Rambam says that's not what it's talking about. What it's talking about, what Chizkiyahu hid, was some sort of voodoo, black magic, weird medicine. However you want to understand that. But it's not talking about normative, accepted medical practice. Okay. So anyway, that's...
If it worked, why?
Yeah, so I don't know, right. I understand the Rambam's basic point. What interested me about this Rambam is he doesn't believe in any of it. So, like, to begin with. So, but it's interesting. But, okay, anyway, Rambam's view of medicine.
What was the difference of time with Rashi and Rambam?
The Rambam was, now you're putting me on the spot, Rambam was 1135 to 1204.
Right, it was 1040 to...
And the what?
1040 to 1100.
And Rashi was 1040 to 1100. So,
but some people say that Rambam never saw Rashi.
I can hear that. Meaning Rashi, in other words, Rashi came before the Rambam, but not by much. So it could be the Rambam saw Rashi's pshat. Could be, but we don't know. And we do. And here I could say, not that I know the Rambam backwards and forwards, but Rambam never quotes Rashi. Never. So, but to be fair, though, I mean, if you know the Rambam, he doesn't quote anybody, which was part of the criticism of the Rambam.
Somebody going, he quotes.
Yeah, yes.
But
he,
not like anybody.
Yeah, but right, he doesn't quote Rishonim. So, I mean, he was one of the first of the Rishonim to begin with, but I'm saying, but yes, he doesn't quote that many people. Okay, let's go on in the Gemara. We have a lot more to do today, but I know that discussion really is an interesting one. Ashlosha lo hodulo. Okay, now three things that Chizkiyahu did, Chachamim said that wasn't right. So number one, kitzes lashos shalhecha v'shigan lamelech Ashur. Cut off the doors of the hechal, sent them to the king of Assyria, right, as a token of peace. Okay, they should not have done that. I think for obvious reasons, meaning that's, it's giving up a lot for peace. V'lo hodulo. Sasam lo megichon ha'elyon v'lo hodulo. He stopped up the upper Gichon river in order to try to impede the progress of the attacking Assyrian army. And the Chachamim didn't agree with him. We'll talk more about that later. And Iber Nisan Benisan, the last thing that he did, which the Chachamim thought was totally inappropriate, was he intercalated the year, meaning he added another month of the year, right? We're about to enter into an Iber year. We're about to enter into a year that has 13 months, not 12 months, right? Coming up, Tavshinayin Dalet. What he did, back in the good old days, they decided, per year, whether or not they're going to make an Iber year or not. And he did so, but he did so one day too late. Meaning he did so already as they already made Nisan, the month of Nisan. Which the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us, and the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us, you're not allowed to do that. You're only allowed to add another Adar in the month of Adar.
But was it Sanhedrin what set the calendar? What was the king
doing? Right, so the king, he obviously got involved. Meaning without knowing all the details, he walked over to the Sanhedrin and he said, here's what we're going to do. and the Gemara and the Chachamim said that's not right. Because it was too late. Markivan dekalan kol ayam kula. Okay, so let's begin now. So first of all, a little more tree knowledge. How did those members of Yericho? We're going back to the Mishnah. We're starting with the things that were done by the members of Yericho. So they grafted trees. What was the actual process? So you'll forgive me. I'll read the Gemara. I'm not going to give you a really good explanation of what's going on over here, as I myself understand very little of what happened. Hey, Chiyavdi Amar Rav Yehuda Maisi Asa Dara Vishikra Dedafna Vikimcha Desare Derame Bemana Delochalfe Alei Ar Binyamin. So the ingredients were, I don't even know what some of these things are, but anyway, the barley and beer and Asa usually refers to Hadassim. And the barley was not put into a kli for 40 days. Umiraskeluhu, and he would boil them up. Fishaduhu ladikla belibe, and they would inject it into the heart of the tree. Okay, it's not. I don't even mean this as a joke, but basically heart of palm. They would put they would inject this mixture into the tree. V'chol dekai ba'arba amas diday ilo avdehalehachi psave, and any other of the surrounding trees, if they didn't get the same injection, so they would die immediately. Psave la'altar. Rav Achare de Rava Amar manche kufre dichron lenukvasa. Or another explanation of what they did is that they placed the male shoots into the female shoots. In other words, grafting. Some form of grafting. Okay, I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know why this is important. Meaning, the Gemara gives us a very detailed description of what they were doing, which we know the Chachamim weren't happy with. And why do we get such a detailed description? I'm not sure why that is. But, okay, we did. Korchen es Hashma. Here we go. The Mishnah now is going to discuss, the Gemara is now going to discuss the Mishnah's reference of what Anshe Yericho did. They bundled Shema together. What does that mean? So the Gemara goes over a couple of explanations. Hechi avdi amar Rav Yehuda omrin Shema Yisrael Shem Elokeinu Shem Echad v'lo yam afsikin. So number one suggests the Gemara, they wouldn't pause between the first pasuk of Shema and the remainder of Shema. Now we're not talking about Baruch Shem. We are going to talk about that in just a moment. But in other words, just a simple break between Echad and Ve'ahavta. If you take a look at Rashi over here writes V'lo yam afsikin. So bein echad leve'ahavta. So they just ran right over the word echad to write ve'ahavta. Afa b'tzarech la'arich be'echad la'afsik bein kabbalas malchus shaman le'dvarim acherim. Because look, the first pasuk of Shema, kabbalas ol malchus shamayim. That's us accepting upon ourselves the yoke of heaven. So really, that should be a standalone pasuk. There should be nothing else after that. Then ve'ahavta already, that's what we're supposed to do. In other words, that's already talking about action. So there should be a break. Shekol echa mekab alav ve'omer echad, hu elokeinu b'pasuk rishon, u'pasuk sheni loshon tzava. Second pasuk already is commandment. So, what they did is they just rolled from one pasuk to the next. Rava amar mafsikin hayu, eloshayu omrim hayom al levavecha. So, another suggestion of the Gemara is that they, instead of saying the word hayom, small break, alav avecha, they just kind of went from hayom right into alav avecha. And what's the big deal? Demashma hayom alav avecha, v'lo machar alav avecha. It makes it sound like, you know, I'll accept this Torah today, but just today, meaning not tomorrow. So in other words, a little pause is necessary between the words hayom and alav avecha, and they didn't do that. Tana Rabbanan Ketzer Korchan Esra Shema Omer Shema Yisro Shem Elkein Hashem Echad V'lo Yam Mafsikin Divrei Rabbi Meir. We have another braisa that discusses more about what exactly they were doing when they were korech, they were bundling. So the first pshat by Rabbi Meir is what we already said. They didn't pause between the word Echad and Ve'ahavta. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mafsikin Hayu Elo Shal Yom Omer Baruch Shem Kavah Machso Le'olam Va'ed. Here's the problem. They didn't say Baruch Shem. And now here's where the Gemara basically introduces us to this idea that that between the first pasuk of Shema and Vahafta, so we say Baruch Shem. Now, the obvious question, which the Gemara is about to get into. Why do we say it? It's not in the Torah. In the Torah, we just read in Parshios a couple weeks ago. In the Torah, it says Shema, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and then the next pasuk is Vahafta. And the problem with Anshei Yericho is that they didn't say Baruch Shem. And we do. And the question, the obvious question is, well, why do we do it? It's not in the Torah.
But suppose the Baruch Shem also declared that they didn't invite them into a
special way to... Well, hold on a second. Let's deal with the basics. So why va'anan my time amrinan lay. So here the Gemara asks the obvious question. So why do we say it? So kedarish Rabbi Shimon Malakish dam Rabbi Shimon Malakish va'yikra Yaakov abanav yomer esvu ve'agid lachem ve'agid lachem. So Yaakov gathers all of his children as he was dying. This is now the end of Sefer Bereishis, end of Parshas Vayechi. So Bikesh Yaakov legalos Levanov Kates Hayamin. So now I kind of feel like we all know this Gemara, but Yaakov at that point in time wanted to share with his children Kates Hayamin. You'll notice, by the way, you open up a Sefer Torah and Parshas Vayechi is stuma, meaning it's there's no separation between Parshas Vayechi and the previous Parsha of Vayigash. And take a look at Rashi, right there on the first Rashi, in Parshas Vayechi. So he basically says, the reason why is because he wanted to reveal to his children the end of days, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu did not allow him that kind of information. But I'll tell you the truth, though. If you look at our Gemara, it doesn't say Kates Hayamim, it says Kates Hayamin, right? The end of the right hand. What exactly does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. Rashi explains over here. Kates Yamin, Sheyachzer Yamino Lefanov, Sheheshiv Achor Yamino Mimnei Oyev. This is anthropomorphic. It's a metaphor. Or basically, a Kadosh Baruch Hu, when he protects the Jewish people, he places Kaviyachol, to the best of our understanding. He places his right hand in front of Yerushalayim. But then when he wants to allow the enemies to enter into Yerushalayim, so he removes his right hand. So that's how Rashi understands the words Kates Hayamin. Now, but going back to the Gemara, the Shechina left Yaakov Avinu. Now, it could be that the reason why I don't have Shechina and I don't have any type of divine knowledge is maybe because one of you just went bad. He's talking to his kids now. Ke'avram, and the truth of the matter is that it's happened before. Avram shiyatsa meimenu Yishmael. V'avi Yitzchak shiyatsa meimenu Esav. So Avram had Yishmael and Yitzchak had Esav. And so, wouldn't shock me if one of you just went bad. Okay? Amr l'banav Shema Yisrael Hashem l'kinu Hashem Echad. And so now, what the kid said, what his son said, was Shema Yisrael Hashem l'kinu Hashem Echad. And now, in this context, by the way, the word Yisrael, you totally understand. Right? In other words, they're talking to their father, Shema Yisrael. Although one can wonder, though, how could they actually say their father's name? You're not allowed to call your father by his name. I guess maybe you could suggest that it's Yisrael, not Yaakov. Okay. Anyway, Amru, Kishem Shem Bilibcha Ela Echad, Kach Ein Bilibenu Ela Echad. No, we're monotheists as well. We're not off the derech. So, Ba'oser Shah Pasach Yaakov Avinu Va'amar Baruch Shem Kavo Machzol Olam Va'ed. And to that, Yaakov's response was Baruch Shem. Okay, so we know, and again, you're not going to find this in the Torah, but we know, based on Torah Shabbat Peh, that Yaakov himself, the first Shema that was said was by Bnei Yaakov, and his response was Baruch Shem. So Amrei Rabbanan, so now the Chachamim said, so here we are now in somewhat of a dilemma. Heichin Avin Amrin Lo Amru Moshe Rabbeinu. So on one hand, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't say it, meaning it's not in the Torah itself. On the other hand, Lo Namru Amru Yaakov, Amru Yaakov. But on the other hand, Yaakov did say Baruch Shem. So it kinesh yom imasa bechashai. So what do we do? Compromise. We'll say Baruch Shem, but we'll say it quietly. The Gemara gives a mashal to help us understand this a little bit better. Like the bas melech who is smelling the food that was cooked in the kitchen. So what is she going to say at that point in time? She's going to say, I want the food. She's a bas melech. It's not appropriate for her to say it. So she's not going to say it. It's not appropriate. However, lo tomar, what's her other option? Not to say anything. Yesh latsar. She's smelling the food. She has a desire for the food. So hitzchilu avdei lahavi b'chashai. So what they do is the intendants understand, and so what they do is they bring it to her quietly, privately, so to say, maybe here literally under the table. So in other words, what does the mashal help us understand over here? But it basically, same basic idea. Yaakov said Baruch Shem. Moshe did not say Baruch Shem. So we say it, but we say it quietly. Am Rabbi Abawi kinu sheyu omer moso b'kol ram imnei taromas aminim. The Gemara says that nowadays we should say it not quietly, we should say it out loud, because taromas aminim. Rashi explains, look, here, watch what I do. I'll say, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and then I'll mutter something under my breath. Now, if I have any cynics sitting around me, God, thank God now I don't, but if I had any cynics sitting around me, so what would they think? What's he saying after accepting upon himself the yoke of heaven? What's he doing now? Right? So maybe it's, you know, he's retracting. Maybe he's, you know, speaking about some other. In other words, the cynics could really look at that and say that's weird. So nowadays, what we do is we say Shema Yisrael, and then we say Baruch Shem B'kol Ram. Now we say it in a loud voice. Now you're probably wondering to yourself, no, we don't. We say it quietly. Uve Naharda Deleika Minim Ad Hashta Amre La B'chashai. In the community of Narada, where there are no minim, there's none of this type of theological cynicism, so they still say quietly to this very day. And I guess we're like Narada. So we say quietly to this very day. It doesn't address the question, which is current, it's a current question. Nowadays, we do it quietly, we say Baruch Shem quietly, for the reason the Gemara just explained to us. What about Yom Kippur? Right, in Yom Kippur we say it loud, because we're like Malachim. So where's the source for that? So I'm going to research that, because that obviously, that must come from somewhere. I don't know where. I'll do a little bit of research. I'll find that out. Yeah, in the Beis HaMikdash, right, that was Ben was referring to earlier. Then the Beis HaMikdash, they would say Baruch Shem. Every time they heard Shem Hashem, they would say Baruch Shem. But the, okay, well, Yom Kippur, I'll look a little bit more into that.